So hello, Fiona.
Hi there, Matthew.
Good to hear your voice again. It's been a while.
It's good to hear your voice again, too.
For those of you that don't know, Fiona hosted The Hidden Island for 3 seasons, and they were 3 amazing seasons. You really missed out here.
And what an incredible 3 seasons it was. Everything from rum running to prohibition to shipwrecks and more. I sure do like hearing the sound of that theme song again.
The dulcet tones are always nice to hear. And what I'm excited to say is that we're going to have another season with all new stories and all new hosts. And the only thing that we'll be missing that we wish were here is you.
Well, I'm cheering from afar and I can't wait to listen to all the episodes.
It's going to be great. For old time's sake, Fiona, would you like to talk us in one more time?
Absolutely. Welcome to The Hidden Island. I'm Fiona Steele, and I'll be your host for this journey.
Hi, I'm Matthew McRae, and you're listening to the latest episode of The Hidden Island. I'm here with Evelyn.
Hi. I'm so excited to be here. Today's topic is actually Black History related. And shockingly, it's not February when we're talking about it. So that's always exciting for me when we can talk about Black History and not just relegate it to 1 month a year.
This is something we had a conversation about not too long ago, about how often Black history or Indigenous history or gets kind of relegated to a corner. Like if you're teaching a course, you have one class where you talk about it. And then it's kind of, all right, we're done. And of course, the truth is that Black history is island history, is Canadian history, just as much as, for lack of a better word, any other history.
See, it's so funny that you say that, Matthew, because when I first got to PEI, one of the biggest things that I distinctly remember is this assumption that Black history in PEI either A, didn't exist, or that Black people in PEI were new. It was a new concept. Immigration has brought all of these people here, is like a phrase that I heard a lot. And I'm finding the more that I do research and the more that I just spend time with you as a person, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's like this actual rich history of Black Islanders.
And yeah, you're absolutely right. I remember when I was going to school, they taught island history in sixth grade when I was going to school here back in the 80s. And that's right. I have outed myself as old.
Oh, no.
But back in the 80s, they taught island history, and I don't remember learning anything about Black Islanders or anything about that at all. And it was only much later on when I was in my late teens that I found out there had been this rich history, and there was this rich history of Black Islanders. Where that starts, nobody really knows, right? There's a lot we don't know about the past, and I think what you said is true. For a long time, island historians basically ignored Black history on PEI. They knew it existed. They knew it was here. It wasn't a secret that was kept. It was just ignored. There's a lot of reasons for that. There's systemic racism, but it's not just the history professors or people like that. It's right. Also the fact that the records are so sparse on the ground because very, very often Black lives weren't recorded because the only time they did get recorded was if they interacted with the law, right? That's the legal records. Well, first of all, we'll acknowledge that the original inhabitants of the island here since time immemorial are the Mi'kmaq, who we know they and their ancestors have been here for at least 12,000 years. So we get to 1720, which is when the first permanent European settlers come to PEI. That's the French. And during the French era, we got to understand that there was a Black population of PEI, and that Black population was enslaved. Now, I think this is something that a lot of people don't realize. There was slavery here in PEI starting right from the early 1700s. But the other thing that people don't realize is that when they do talk, and we talked about this before, but when people talk about slavery, they often picture it as being kind of a carbon copy of the southern United States.
Well, and this is the thing. I'm guilty of this. I am what I would like to consider an educated individual. But when I first heard slavery in PEI, I think my brain did the same thing that a lot of other people's brains do, which is we immediately think antebellum South, right? Yes. And it's so interesting because as somebody who's from the city of Atlanta, Georgia, and am very familiar with the history of the antebellum South, I knew that the image wasn't correct. And I knew that I didn't have any other information to fill the gap, right? Because I thought that. I was like, yeah, okay, so like enslaved people, right? So we're thinking like plantations and things like that. And then I got to PEI and I was like, where would that have been exactly? There's this moment where you can't kind of rectify this myth around the history of this concept in this new place and what I know to be true from where I'm from. And so if it's not giant plantations, because it couldn't have been, there wasn't enough money or enough land and we're not growing those kinds of crops here, like what is it?
No, and that's a great question. I think the historian Ira Berlin, he talks about two types of slave society. So that would be, for example, the antebellum South that you're talking about, where you have huge plantations and the economy is entirely dependent on slavery, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have a society with slaves. And that would be more like here in the Maritimes and in New England, where enslaved population is usually much smaller. It doesn't control the economy. It's not what's used to drive the economy, but it's a part of the economy. Mm-hmm. It's still here. Slavery is still a thing, but it's looks different because you don't have these giant plantations. You don't have that those kind of economies of scale. You don't have a big crop. So, for example, in both during the French regime and afterwards, when slavery existed here on Prince Edward Island, because most of the black population that came to PEI in the early days were enslaved people that came and then were either later freed or some of them might have arrived free, but it's hard to tell. So I was saying that we had slave societies and societies with slaves. And the Maritimes, including Prince Edward Island, was a society with slaves. So that meant it was very different than the plantation slavery. And some of the fill-in-the-blanks is most slaves, we know, were domestic. That didn't mean they worked only inside. They could also work on the farm, mm-hmm. but you had a much smaller number. You didn't have huge plantations of, you know, of tens or hundreds of slaves. Instead, you had enslaved people. Maybe here on PEI, for example, I think the largest number we've been able to find in the British era was four, someone owning four enslaved people. During the French regime, it was 12. Right. So those numbers were relatively small compared to what you'd see in the American
South.
Well,
what South. I'm used to. Right?
Exactly,
well,
what you're used to.
Which sounds really strange to say as a, like, 2023 black American in Canada to say what I'm used to around slavery is. But it's always so fascinating to me because it's expensive. Those societies that you're describing versus what we had access to or what was the norm in PEI at the time is resources. It's expensive. And culturally, I feel like there may have been a bit of a pushback there, even though we didn't record it and we didn't talk about it. Because you and I were chatting just the other day about this difference between enslavement and indentured servitude, because I find that in PEI, when we talk about slaves or we don't talk about them, well, we also had people who were white who were enslaved and like, ah, that's indentured servants. Those are separate things.
Absolutely, 100%. And the difference between slavery and indentured servitude is slavery was permanent and it was intergenerational. It was also racial, right? White people could not become a slave, a chattel slave, which mm-hmm. meant they couldn't be enslaved for their whole life. And then any children they had would also be enslaved.
Right.
Whereas an indentured servant signed a contract and was in that contract for a fixed amount of time, usually no longer than 7 years. And sure, there was lots of abuses that happened to people that were in indentured servitude. And sometimes they did it under pressure. They had no money. They were broke. It was the only way to kind of, you know, go make a living. But at the end of that, they were free. And their children.
With stuff, right? Like
you
were free and like you got land or money or something. Like somebody like patted you on the back and said, nice service. Like I feel like that's the distinct difference, right?
Absolutely. You got something at the end of that. Usually you got an amount of money or some land and then boom, you're off to make your fortune.
First myth busted.
Myth busting.
I love this. I think that when we think about the history of black people on the island, in our minds, it's slavery for an extended period of time, kind of like the antebellum South, and then jump ship to the bog, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's not even true because how long was slavery legally on the books in PEI?
Well, that's a really interesting question because you see, so here's the weird thing about slavery in Canada is no legislature in Canada wanted to make it kind of official, for lack of a better word. You know, there was reasons for that. I think there was people that were very uncomfortable with it. But also it was just kind of like, it was a common law thing. It wasn't necessary to put it on the books. Mm. But here on PEI in 1781, we passed a law that was basically said, if you baptize an enslaved person and they become a Christian, they're still enslaved. Harvey Amani Whitfield has written that he believes, his theory is that one of the reasons this was passed, because in Scotland at the time, there was a law that said Christians weren't allowed to be enslaved. So in Scotland, there was a law, and a huge number, I mean, relative to the population of the island, of Scottish settlers were coming in the 1770s and 80s. And so they wanted to make sure that Scottish common law didn't kind of take over, and they wanted to make sure that potential slave owners who wanted to migrate to Prince Edward Island would know that they could keep their property.
Interesting.
That's his theory as to why that happened. Because it wasn't necessary to pass that law to have slavery be legal in PEI.
Right.
But they wanted, it was almost like kind of a like, don't worry, white slave owners, you can.
Specifically the wealthy ones, please come with your money because we don't have any.
Exactly.
Right? Like, please come with your resources because we need them.
Exactly, because we have nothing. And that's an interesting thing about slavery in Prince Edward Island too, is compared to New Brunswick and Nova Scotia, the other two Atlantic provinces, where enslaved people were owned by not just the rich, but also kind of the middle class, mm-hmm. for lack of a better word. Here in PEI, it was exclusively the elite.
Yeah.
It was exclusively the elite because no one else had the money.
Yeah.
To, and it, like you said, it was expensive, and it was almost like kind of a status symbol. Like if you look at the list of people, the loyalists as they came, right. It was the rich loyalists that owned enslaved people, the Shermans, the Robinsons, these other families that all initially owned enslaved people when they came here. It was this very high status kind of thing to do or thing to own.
Oof.
Yeah.
Yikes.
No, not nice.
Yikes.
Life would have been tough for people here too, for enslaved people, because they would have been dealing with a lot of isolation, right? Because as I said, there was only small numbers, so they wouldn't have had many other black people around close to them. But there is evidence that they did communicate and did hang out and even hatched escape plans. And we have a great story about Jupiter Wise. It's quite interesting because Jupiter Wise, we don't know if he was actually enslaved or not, because he's in the Book of Negroes, which was this book of loyalists who had come up to Nova Scotia after the American Revolution, and black loyalists who were listed as free. But he was working as a servant when he came here. And this is another weird thing, is that the paperwork, it's so hard to tell because servant and enslaved person are used almost interchangeably.
Wow.
So sometimes we know that someone was enslaved and it's very clear, and other times it's like maybe or maybe they were a servant, we can't tell.
Is this what fed the myth, though, that white people were also slaves in PEI? Perhaps because the servant phrasing could have gone either way?
Absolutely, I think so, yeah, because there was, of course, white servants because you had,
Right.
So you had very poor people who were working as servants. And there was a common thread Harvey Amani Whitfield talks about. He talks about the fact that because, of course, nobody owned land on PEI because we had the absentee landlords.
Right.
And often the people who were fighting against the absentee landlords who wanted land given back to the people, they would compare tenants living on the land to being enslaved to the landlords.
Ah.
And so this was a common language. He even thinks this kind of overshadowed, ended up overshadowing slavery and and it has overshadowed a lot of issues in island history because people focus a lot on that land question when they talk about PEI history.
Of course.
I think that servant thing does confuse and muddy the issue,
but
we know that there was enslavement. And for example, Jupiter Wise conspired with several enslaved people who were owned by the governor. They were going to get a sloop, get a bunch of food, and escape. And he was kind of caught by the law and chased somebody down the street when they tried to confront him, and was just not having any of it. And he was arrested as a result of this. And because he was charged with possible theft, one of the sentences at that time could have been death, but he pleaded benefit of clergy, which was something, it was kind of a stalling tactic, but he showed some cleverness and some intelligence. There was a lot of wiggle room. There was a lot of negotiation that would happen because we have records, not here in PEI, but in New Brunswick and Nova Scotia, of both white people trying to tell indentured servants, actually, no, they're slaves, like going to the court and saying, no, there are slaves, and the indentured servants having to say, no, that's not the case, right? We have a case of a woman who fled back to her parents' house because she said that her boss, the woman that she worked for, kept threatening to
lie and say it was enslavement.
Yeah, lie and say it was enslavement and then send her to the West Indies, which was the worst possible thing most people could imagine because that was where the plantations were and that's where you could really become completely enslaved.
Right.
And on the other hand, we had enslaved people who would make the case, hey, well, actually, I'm not enslaved, I'm an indentured servant. You'd have people make that case and go to the courts about it and fight that case saying, well, there's no paperwork to prove otherwise, you know. And so there would be these back and forth.
Yeah. I think that this is the one of the key differences for me in my experience as somebody who grew up in America and hearing about slavery versus hearing about what the enslaved population of, say, the Maritimes looked like. And it's this key difference of autonomy, even while enslaved, which sounds so weird to say like that. But it's an interesting thing because just being able to chase someone down the street. Let me tell you something. Jupiter Wise would not have successfully done that in the state of Georgia even up to recently, right? Like, that would not have been the trajectory for that. He would not have stolen goods and then been able to chase someone down the street and then have someone show up to his house, knock on the door, and just arrest him like a normal person. Now, I'm sure that there are some gray areas around this construct that, like, I don't know anything about because I'm new. But I think that that story in and of itself, even if that's a portion of how that went down, is so different from how any of that would have gone in the southern United States.
Absolutely.
Not better, just different. And I think that that, for me, is why I'm really excited to be chatting with you today, because this key pivot around what the mentality and the history is around Black community and PEI, what it used to be and then where it is now and where it's headed, is fundamentally different than the United States. And I came here and I had the kind of lazy cognitive shortcut that it was all the same. And by chatting with you, I'm like, oh my gosh, we don't have Jupiter Wise stories. When I grew up in Atlanta, we didn't have somebody like that. That's not real. That didn't happen. Right? That story ended poorly. And it wasn't with him being able to plead what?
Benefit of clergy.
Benefit of clergy and then disappear. Like, that's not a thing. Right. For me, as we're chatting, I'm just, my brain is really going around how this history kind of led to the understanding of the community that is the bog or that was the bog and now has also progressed forward into present day and ultimately future Black community, because that's the history, is actually I'm not enslaved. I'm an indentured servant and I can talk my way out of it in court.
And it really, that was the other thing, though. It was so situational, right? One farm, you might be able to chase someone down the street with a stick. On another farm, it might not work out so well, right?
Yeah.
And even in the case of Jupiter Wise, ultimately, he did escape and flee and got caught in Nova Scotia and brought back. And eventually, he was supposed to be shipped to Bermuda, and we don't have any records of what happened to him after that.
Mm.
So even in the case of Jupiter Wise, we can say there's definitely resistance. There's an autonomy that you don't see in some other places. But ultimately, yeah, as you said, it wasn't better.
It was just different. Yeah.
And the other thing I think that's important to note, the thing is, because some of the, you know, the most horrible features of enslavement weren't here, you know, with that plantation approach, I think people have a tendency to go, okay, well, it wasn't so bad. Or it was better, right? And that's, I really want to emphasize that that wasn't the case, and that ultimately, too, a lot of the racism and discrimination that inhabitants, Black inhabitants of PEI face for the next, well, up until the present, have their genesis in slavery, because that set the tone. It was one of those circular logics where, Black people are enslaved because they are inferior, and they're inferior because they're enslaved. And it became the circle. But even after enslavement ended, racism, that sense of superiority, stayed. Mm-hmm. Of course, Black people prospered and worked hard and fought these this oppression in all kinds of different ways here in PEI. We have some great stories from the bog, from people who lived there and from other places on PEI, where the Shepherd family that lived out on Eastern PEI.
Right.
But nonetheless, they faced these challenges. And I think in a smaller society like PEI, where there was more intimacy and a better chance to get to know people than in some other places, there was a chance to integrate more into the community.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. But it was still a challenge.
You know,
it took a lot of work for a lot of people to persevere in those circumstances.
Mm-hmm. And I find it fascinating because when I got to PEI and I didn't find a Black neighborhood, I was super confused. not necessarily because I expected there to be a Black neighborhood, but of course there's a Black neighborhood. There's always one. But the fact that post, say, the bog, for example, kind of being uprooted and moved for a whole host of reasons, I found that the kind of cultural assimilation into islander became the prominent language, as opposed to, say, being a Black Islander. And so what does it look like when your singular Black community, say the Bog, for example, kind of dissolves, which is a nice way of the actual history of what occurred to the Bog, in the Bog. But when that community is uprooted and moved, it never really pieces itself back together in the same way. And when I first got here, I thought, wow, that's really sad. I can't believe that there's not a strong Black thriving community. And then I realized there was one. It just doesn't look what I'm used to seeing. And then I started spending time in PEI, and I'm like, oh, well, it's because there is this kind of integration of sorts into island society, into island culture, where to me, it almost seems like that's the prominent kind of ideology or culture in PEI. Not necessarily that you are like a Black Islander, but Islanders are Islanders are Islanders, which is really fascinating to me because you don't see that in the States in the same way.
For many years, there's been a strong sense of islandness, right? And I think this is allowing us to expand our idea now of what islandness encompasses, because mm-hmm. I think, especially after the Black community, which was always, you know, somewhat small back in the day, after it kind of dissipated and dissolved and all the things we're talking about there, there was the sense that, oh, well, that part of our history is over. But the truth is that even in the 20th century, after the Bog kind of disappeared, there were still islanders of Black descent, and there still are now. So, Evelyn, let's talk a little bit about the Bog. The Bog was this neighborhood here in Charlottetown in the West End near Government Pond. And if you ever visit Beaconsfield Historic House and you look out the windows, you would have been looking out at the Bog at that time. Now it's a government parking lot. The neighborhood is gone. But from the early 1800s until the early 1900s, the Bog was this neighborhood that had a large Black population here in Charlottetown. At its height, they think it had over 100 Black people living there. And that would have been that central Black neighborhood at the time. And we have lots of evidence of community. Jim Hornby's written about some of the different people who came out of the Bog. One of the first Black heavyweight boxing champions in the United States emigrated to Boston from Charlottetown, George Godfrey, and he was from the Bog. And we also have evidence, another sports story out of there is the West End Rangers hockey team, which joined the Black Hockey League here in the Maritimes and was quite successful. They used to play on the ice of Government Pond at the time. A descendant of one of the Bog inhabitants who we had the opportunity to interview, Linda Hennessy. She's got lots of stories about the Bogs.
My name is Linda Hennessy. I am a direct descendant of one of the first Black families to come to PEI. The family name is Shepherd. Many of the Black people lived in the Bog, built homes, and raised their families there until the Bog was torn down and the government building was built. The Blacks then moved to other parts of the island. Many moved to Boston. Some of the jobs that the Black Islanders had back in the early 1800s. They would fish at the Peaks Key, it's called now. They'd fish all day, and then they would take their fish and they would go house to house and sell them to make money for their families. So that was a job they had. Then they would go to the woods and cut down trees and cut them down into small pieces to sell for wood stoves. These men, they worked outside of town. They cut the trees down on public land. And they would go house to house and sell the wood. This is early, early days. Some of the women, they would make candy. Of course, they shovel snow. And I don't know how much credit they got for all the work they did. The governor's wife, Mrs. Fanny, her name was Phoebe Burns. She didn't get up in the morning and cook breakfast and clean the house. That would have been my ancestors that did those jobs. The wealthy people in Charlottetown especially, they hired my people to do the work that needed to be done. I want you to know how proud of my Black ancestors I am. Many Blacks on PEI worked hard. Most had jobs and were proud people. We all have overcome hardships and went on to live good lives. I have always felt that my ancestors were driving me to keep their history alive. So that is what I am doing today.
And it was started in the early 1800s by formerly enslaved people who moved there, and gradually it became this neighborhood. There was a school, there was all the kind of senses of community you'd expect. And gradually, of course, what happened is that people moved away for better opportunities, and then gentrification happened, where rich people started to move in or well-to-do and build nicer houses, and then, of course, that was driving out the local population.
Matthew, I guess my question is, was the Bog the only place where we found Black Islanders?
No, absolutely not. There were Black Islanders who lived on rural PEI at this time. A good example of that is the Shepherd family. And they moved to the 7 Mile Road, which is in eastern PEI. And that area became known by Darkies Hollow for very unfortunate reasons. But they had a very big family, and that family, most of the children stayed on PEI. Mm. And so as a result, that family, there's a lot of people who can still trace their lineage to that family. And in fact, in 2006, there was a study done, a genealogical study of islanders who were descended from this original Black population. And they found about 50% of those could trace ancestors back to David and Keziah. So they really had a huge influence and became a really, as you talked about there earlier, integrated part of the community and were considered just regular community members. They were considered islanders like everyone else, even if that took some time for that to happen. Mm-hmm. And you still have those names and those terms that are, racist.
Yeah, for sure. And I think Scott Parsons, didn't he write a song about this?
Absolutely. Yeah, he did.
Oh my goodness. Can we play a little bit of the song? That would be awesome.
I think we should.
Traveling from Cardigan to Charlottetown. Find yourself out after the sun goes down. But there's a place that you can go. Darkest Hollow on the 7 Mile Road. Darkest Hollow on the 7 Mile Road. Darkest Hollow on the 7 Mile Road.
Slavery ended on PEI officially, like everywhere else in Canada, in 1834 with the emancipation of the slaves throughout the British Empire. But by that time, it was already gone.
Okay.
And there was two reasons for that. One was just because people gradually, through social pressure, were freeing enslaved people.
Mm.
But the second one was that in 1825, and by this time, we have reason to believe there were no enslaved people left on PEI, so it was kind of closing the barn door after the horses had gone out. But the legislature passed a law repealing that 1781 baptism
of
enslaved people.
They wanted
Act.
It on the record, right? That they said no. They said we repealed this.
Absolutely. I mean, that was it. It was kind of like, let's all pat ourselves on the back.
Right?
Exactly.
Okay. And I guess for me, too, with this concept of like this act where if you're baptized, you're still enslaved versus, and now we're repealing it. Forever too late, and the end of slavery, yay, except for slavery hadn't been here for, I don't know, what, 2 decades almost before, or the decade at that point?
At least a decade, yeah, at least a decade.
At least a decade at that point. And it's such an interesting thing to me because for PEI, it's so necessary to like be able to trace your family history and your family lineage to know where you're from, on top of this idea of just like, and then we also did the right thing. And it's like, come on, guys, come on.
Well, the other thing, too, is that the repeal of this law didn't make slavery illegal. I think we often picture that it did. It just said, okay, that we no longer have a law telling you that, a Christian is still a slave, right, if they convert. And so it was only in 1834 when the British government in London said, throughout the empire, we are ending slavery. But, of course, even then, the way they did that was by buying out slave owners. People who were freed got nothing, but slave owners got a massive amount of money. Basically, it's compensation for their quote-unquote loss of property.
Oh, my goodness.
Listeners, you can't see me doing massive air quotes
now. Yeah.
So what you had, and actually, the British government, the money they paid for that, they got a loan, I believe, and that loan was only paid off like in the 20th century.
Wow.
It was good because it was the end of enslavement, but again—
Good for who?
Exactly. Let's not pat ourselves on the back too much, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's still a day that we should remember for all those reasons, right? Not just to celebrate and go, yay, we're great.
Right.
But remember because it helps us talk about this history.
Well, and the interesting thing about Emancipation Day and PEI is it's recent. Like, we started recognizing it as August 1st recently. And I think our friend Debbie Langston actually talked about this exact thing in her interview.
Gwei, Nin Deluisi Debbie Langston. I am a member of the Black community here in PEI. I'm a writer who writes about social justice issues specifically pertaining to racialized people living in PEI for one of the local newspapers, and I am the diversity consultant with the Department of Education in Early Years. I'm here to talk to you today about Emancipation Day, which was declared in 2021 by the Government of Canada. The history of the day came about after numerous acts in Britain to first of all limit the act of slavery. In 1807, an act ended the British involvement in the slave trade. Finally, in 1833, the Act was written and came into given royal assent on the 1st of August 1834. It applied to Britain and her colonies. These changes were brought about by some legal challenges that were being led by British abolitionists, and there was a growing anti-slavery sentiment within Britain and her colonies. The Act granted freedom to anyone under the age of 6 years. People who were six and over were actually apprenticed under the Act, and they needed to serve another 4 to 6 years working for free in return for bed and board and providing free labour to their former owners. We need to understand and acknowledge that the wealth and the prosperity of many successful economies throughout the world were built on the blood, sweat and tears of the enslaved. We think of Canada as being the home for the Underground Railroad and the final destination of people escaping slavery, and also a place where the abolitionist movement helped to funnel people away from the States. What we don't talk about so much is that Canada actually has its own history of enslavement. It's lesser known, but certainly conversations now and historians are looking more about Canada's role in slavery. I can share some of the things that we do know about the history of enslaved Black people in PEI. In around 1732, Jean-Pierre Roma, who was part of the Three Rivers settlement, is believed to have been the largest slave owner in the colony, and he owned about 12 enslaved people. In PEI, the practice of enslavement or slavery ended around 1825, which is about 9 years before the actual official abolition by the British. I'm really appreciative of the opportunity to come and talk to you about Emancipation Day and why that understanding that history and learning about that history is important. And the final thing I'd like to talk about is a project that I've undertaken that details the history of Black women in PEI. And so what we're actually doing is creating a resource that will be available for grade 7 students in social studies. And as I said, it details the history of Black women in PEI, starting with the transatlantic slave trade, and then there will be lessons around what it would have been like to have been an enslaved woman at that time, and then looking at celebrating the life and the resiliency and the resistance of the inhabitants of the bog. The resource was created in collaboration with the PEI Advisory Council Status of Women, the Black Cultural Society, members of the Black community, numerous government departments, and the PEI Museum and Heritage Foundation. I'm happy to say that, you know, it's going to be available to students now so that they can actually start sharing in these stories and learning about them, and hopefully it will inspire them to want to learn more, and we can continue to create resources and build our understanding as an island community.
So Matthew, I think with our conversation about Emancipation Day, it's probably a good time to pause, and then we can pick up in part two of the episode talking about not only the current state of the Black community, but what the future of the Black community looks like.
That sounds like an exciting conversation. Everyone out there in podcast land, we'll see you in the next episode of The Hidden Island. The Hidden Island Podcast is proudly sponsored by the Confederation Center of the Arts, the Provincial Credit Union, and the Gray Group. We give them our sincere thanks for their support. We also want to thank Food Island PEI, Water Prince Corner Shop, and Upstreet Craft Brewing Company for the support. The Prince Royal Museum and Heritage Foundation is a not-for-profit organization that relies on the generosity of Islanders to make things like this podcast happen. So if you'd like to make a donation or become a member, please visit our website at peimuseum.ca. Every little bit helps, And we are dedicated, as you can tell from this episode, to sharing not just the human, but also the natural history, and noting that the two are connected. All right, well, we'll see you in the next episode.